Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to part two of our interview with A. Paul Johnson, fabulous composer. We've just heard Symphony No. 2 IV, which may be Symphony No. 2 4. Let's just keep talking with A. Paul.
I do want to ask you about, you are so accomplished, and reading over your bio sheet that you sent, was just fascinating, because you've been so many places, you've done so many different things musically and everything, and the people you've worked with and the organizations and fellowships and all of that stuff, that the accolades, if you will, the highlights, are just, you know, so impressive. And I look at your art journey, if you will, as being so successful. Like I said, you have been able to, you know, earn your living doing what you love, and that for any artist is the ultimate goal, right? Because otherwise we're starving in an attic and we have a day job we hate, right? But so I wanted to ask you about kind of like your artistic process, in a way, like how you make and approach your artistic goals. A lot of artists I talk to, you know, an inspiration hits and then they either just run with it, or some artists have very specific steps in their process they go through. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, and the kind of follow up with that would be any obstacles or challenges you've faced and or highlights you want to talk about, or at least do a shout out for, you know. So those kind of, when you have a goal, how does that process work?
There's two ways to write, and I have done both, and that is, you know, to receive a commission, mm-hmm. and I've been blessed to have some wonderful commissions from some great soloists and ensembles and, you know, full orchestras. The other is, you know, a piece just gets a hold of you and haunts you, and then mm-hmm. you write it and then try to find someone.
Someone who will also appreciate it, yeah.
Bring that to life. And there's advantages to both. The nice thing about the commission, and I shouldn't say this, I'm giving away a secret. I swore I never would.
I can edit it out if we want to.
you usually get half in advance uh-huh. and half on completion.
Right.
So I would, you know, ask for the advance check and go out and spend it and not do one iota of work on the piece. And then I would sit there and think, if I'm going to pay next month's rent,
right,
I need that last check.
So it's a motivator, you know, that's motivation. Yeah, and different so people would, get motivated yeah. in different ways. So.
And so then I would really get busy and sometimes work, you know, 20-hour shots. And sure. just, well, I go into, whether it's a commission or writing my own, I kind of go into state. Mm-hmm. I go into this. I mean, my various spouse, I've been married a lot. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I guess I love being married. I do it over and over. But, you know, they would say, you know, we thought you were half asleep, or I thought you were, you know, spacing out, or, you know, what have you been smoking in the back room or whatever? And I said, no, I'm working.
Yeah.
And I actually listen to other music while I'm working. I'll put on some Mozart or some Beethoven and compose.
Wow.
I think it occupies one half of my brain, so the creative part can go.
Right. Wow, that's impressive, because I don't think I could do that. I'm not musical at all, so it's a moot point, but that would be difficult for me, but that's
interesting. And I only use fountain pens. I have no computer programs. We talked about that kind of pre-interview, uh-huh. that I'm a technical, coming around the corner of not even 20th century, let alone 21st. But I use fountain pens and cartridge pens on heavy bond paper.
Oh,
and it's the feel of that pen on the paper that actually pulls my hand through the writing of the music.
That's really cool.
And I will write, like I say, for hours and hours and just be in a dream state. And then when I finish it and, like, take it to the piano or take it to the music stand and really try to double check what I do. And I don't say I don't make mistakes during that. You have to use whiteout, because I've been doing it in indelible ink.
Right.
So I'll go back and fix the few things that I can, but I'll look at that and I'll say, Well, who wrote that?
Yeah, I, you know, this is speaking to me as a, mostly as a visual artist. When I paint, I get into a similar headspace that you're describing, where I am lost in that canvas. And I've been known to complete an entire painting within, you know, an hour to 3 hours. And I've been known to work on a painting for over a year before it's done, you know. And but there's something about the time in the canvas that I am on one level unaware of, you know, and hours can pass, I don't eat, whatever, you know, whatever happens. And oftentimes the finished product, I kind of look at like what you just said, like, did I paint that? Because I'm a self-taught artist. I don't know the right way to use certain brushes or what effect that's supposed to create. I just do what I do. And because my vision's failing, I use a lot of texture. I usually texturize a canvas first and then paint over it in case I need to feel where those textures are, especially since I started doing more abstract and semi-abstract paintings with my eyesight failing. So sometimes I'll finish something and I'll look at it and I'll be like, wow, I don't even remember using that color in that particular, because I paint in layers and sometimes the colors merge and sometimes I paint over colors and things. And I will honestly be like, I have no memory of that, you know. So I'm hearing that. I'm sympathizing with you on that experience.
The downside of that is, you know, we've come through a time, and I started my early writing in the late 60s. So, you know, I've been at this a long time, but I've seen a shift in how culture looks at artists, particularly independent artists. Yeah. And all along the way, I've gotten involved with composer groups, you know, academic programs and so forth. And those, and I don't want to make the term sound too detrimental, but what we call career artists.
Yes. Yes.
Have criticized me very heavily and said, well, you know, you can never be a career artist because you write from all these different perspectives. Nobody knows what's going to come out of your mouth next. And I said, that's because it's not coming out of my mouth.
Right.
It's coming out of a deeper place that uses me as a vehicle to communicate it to the culture at large. I said, I'm not necessarily in charge of that creative process until it goes into rehearsal. Now, for performing arts, you still have to, you know, solicit, inspire, coerce, however you need to, the ensemble players, the realization artists, to take it through the next step.
Right.
And I've written things for 80-piece orchestras. So, you know, that's a lot of people to entrain into your vision to make the reality come true.
Right.
And at that point, you have to be totally the opposite. Now you go to the other side of the brain, and everything is very technical and very on mark, and you've got to know the language and you've got to know how to communicate.
It's all about the final production, what the audience is going to see and hear. Yeah.
Because it's a triangle.
Yes.
You know,
right.
You have the creative artist, you have the performing artist, and then you have the audience.
Yes.
And you don't, that energy's got to circulate between all of them.
That's a very good point to make. Most people, they go to a production, you know, whether it's musical theater or an opera or whatever, and they experience that final product, that final production. And they don't think about, know, probably care, unless they're also involved in productions. They don't think about what goes into that, from the composition, starting points, all the way through the interpretation by the actors, musicians, symphony, whoever, the conductors, everything, to the final piece, what they experience. And you know, I love what you said about career artists, because when I paint in so many different styles and with so many weird made-up techniques. You can't look at my body of work and say, oh, I can identify Alice in there, because this is, you know, there isn't one Alice as a painter, you know, and I'm hearing that you sort of feel that way as a composer. There isn't one.
Sometimes my humorous response to, you know, why, you know, what's wrong with your career? You know, this is not the way to have a career in the music business. And I say, well, you know, I would love to have a career, but, you know, composing gets in the way.
That's perfect. I love that. That needs to be on t-shirts. You know, you should patent that. You should patent that. Now, audience out there, you
cannot. There's our retirement fund.
That's right. You cannot steal that. That's A. Paul's. Okay. I'm telling the audience. Hands off. Copyright right there. Intellectual copyright right there. Join us next time as we continue our conversation with composer A. Paul Johnson.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.